Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
This is Corey Reynolds and I am here with Chris Gordon on Hellblazer Biz.
Hey everyone, today's interview I will be talking to the amazing, as you've seen, Corey Reynolds, currently shown in Resident Alien as Sheriff Thompson, and also a really, really long stint and successful stint on The Closer as well. I forgot to record the intro originally because we just got straight into the conversation, so please just sit back and enjoy this amazing chat with Corey Reynolds.
She's watching Resident Alien as well, and she's just like, "Oh my god!"
Enjoying it, huh? It's a fun show. It took us a while to actually get it from the pilot to the screen. We shot the pilot in October of 2018, so it was quite a while getting the entire season. I think second season will move a little faster, obviously, but it was quite the journey. We felt like we were kind of like the little show that could, you
know. Definitely. I mean, we'll get into that as well, because I say it's the little show that could, that's going to hit the world by storm, I think, because I've been crying. I really have. I mean, Alan, so we'll get onto it later, but Alan Tudyk, I love him anyway, and your character is just hilarious as well.
It's hard to do scenes with Alan because he's so funny. Like, if there's one person, my deputy, Elizabeth Bowen, she's very funny as well. She can break me too, but Alan is a whole nother level, man. Levi as well. Levi is another one that, the mayor, Mayor Ben, he breaks me a lot, you know, but Alan is, uniquely suited for this role. I mean, it's amazing what he's done with Harry. Harry's a really, really funny character. Yeah,
definitely. That was a question I was going to ask later. How was it like working with him? Because I mean, his facial you're right, because he's got the right facial expressions. He's just, you know, Alan has it for that role, and even when he's obviously his alter ego. With hardly any facial expressions, but it's, oh my god, it's just so funny.
You know, it's got to be a unique thing to be playing an alien pretending to be a human, because there's so many layers to the performance. You have first of all, the alien mindset, which I love. I think the way the show is constructed as well, utilizing the voiceover to get inside Harry's mind. So you have these moments where what he's doing in the moment is in direct contrast to what he's thinking. And then watching Alan portray that line between trying to be the human in front of the humans, while at the same time not being able to completely remove himself from, you know, his mission, his thinking, and the alien component. You know what I mean? He's amazing, dude. He's Alan's top notch.
It's brilliant. I mean, I think it was the last episode. We were in episode 3 now. So I can't remember the little boy's name, but his mother just left, and she goes,
Max.
She goes, "Yeah, Max, because I'm going to kill him."
Yeah, Judah. Judah's great. Yeah.
She goes, "I'm going to kill him," and he goes, "You and me both." And she looks at him.
You know, there's around that scene, there's two moments in that episode that really, really, to me, they're subtle moments, but they're just so funny, and they're a testament to Alan. Is in that scene where Meredith, when she goes in and she's talking to Alan to Harry, and she goes, you know, "Max, my son told me you were an alien." And Harry has this long pause, and then he's like, "What's that then?" You know what I mean? It's like this really kind of high-pitched kind of. And I mean, that floors me every time. And in the very next scene with Max and Harry, when he calls Max an asshole at the end of that, he's like, "Asshole." You know what I mean? It kind of like comes. Like that. Yeah, that's that those two in particular, and they're little things, you know. I mean, yeah, I think that's what really gives Harry and Alan's performance, you know, it's the subtlety, the nuance of it all. It's not, it'd be really easy to be over the top. You know what I mean? Yeah. That would be the easy route, but giving him, you know, there's this also this moment in the pilot where he's first examining the body and he's leaning over the body. And if you notice, you probably can go back and watch it now, but he's got his hands right there near his chest and you see his little fingers and he only has two of them out like this. And it's almost like he is mimicking his alien body. He's still, because he's still learning to be human. That's another thing that kind of happens over the season is watching him become slowly more acclimated to being human. You know what I mean? Watching that transition, because I've only seen, I've seen what you've seen now. I've seen one through three. I've had some, I've gone in and done some ADR work where I've seen some of the scenes from the upcoming episodes, but I haven't seen the complete episodes beyond what the audience has seen, but I know what's coming. And, you know, I'm just so excited about how funny I think all of this shit is. Like, I've never been able to work on something quite like this before, where I could be someone like Sheriff Mike. And be able to ad lib and improvise and have an environment where that was not only welcome but encouraged in some ways. And that's a testament to our leadership with Chris Sheridan, our showrunner. And you know, we have a unique family. You know what I mean? It's fun.
Yeah.
It's the best job I've ever had.
That's fantastic. I mean, you just like, I was just thrown all my questioning out, and I was like, "I'm twisted a turn. This is perfect. This is great." I was going to say, "Work, yeah," because I mean, looking at how much fun it must be, as I say, all of you, every single one of you, is so good on that show. And I mean, obviously, the sheriff as well comes in so straight laced. I mean, he's a no nonsense, straight talking guy. Calls himself the Big Black. That's who we want, and that was hilarious as well when he said that, and he's like, because of your car.
Because of your truck, right. I think, you know, there's a couple of things to be said. You know, Big Black Sheriff Mike isn't wrong. There's something weird about Harry. You know what I mean? But I think, you know, in our world, in our society, you know, there are people who have idiosyncrasies and might be a little different than everyone else. Like Elizabeth Bowen says, like Deputy Liv says, everybody's can be a little different. You know what I mean? So there's this hesitation to be too judgmental, I think, on most of the characters' behalf, not so much mine. My character calls it. He's going to call it straight the way that he seems. He's a weird some bitch. You know what I mean? He's weird. But I think, you know, not knowing what Harry's, you know, if he has a deficiency in some way mentally, not knowing what that is, creates a very kind of walking on eggshells kind of thing. I mean, he could be on the spectrum. You know what I mean? He could have some sort of, you know, brain injury. We don't know exactly what it is. And so I think the characters try their best to be respectful of who he is. And that in and of itself, you know, creates comedy because the audience knows the truth. That's another thing I think is great about how the show is set up is that from the very beginning, the audience knows that Harry is an alien. And so from the very, very beginning of the show, everything he does has two meanings to the viewer watching at home. It has a meaning to the characters in the world that he inhabits, and it has a meaning to the viewer at home because they know a big secret that none of us know. You know what I mean? And that kind of unique component, I think, you know, makes for fun storytelling. The audience, I think, kind of has the feeling of being on an inside joke to a small degree. You know what I mean? And trying to make these, you know, every character is a little weird. We're all a little weird in our own way. And trying to make each character unique but normal so you can have a normal reaction to Harry's oddness. You know what I mean? If all of us were as weird as Harry, then, you know, we would just have chaos run amok in the town. But, you know, for the most part, you know, besides my character's kind of gregarious nature, which we get into during the course of the season, there's going to be more to explore with Sheriff Mike and kind of give the audience an idea of how he became how he is and why he is the way he is. But, you know, having that groundedness with all the other characters and keeping Harry in the place where he gets to be the, well, he's the straight man in some scenes and the comedic in the others. I mean, I think that's another thing that's unique about the show is that it would be easy with this setup, you know, especially, you know, if you wanted to, you know, coming from the comic world, but with this setup, if you were to completely abandon the comic world, it would be very easy to make it a slapstick, goofy, kind of over-the-top, you know, kind of comedy. And while there are moments that may feel that way, I think the goal ultimately is to have storytelling that is encompassing of an entire palette of emotions. We're not, you know, just trying to create... we want people to laugh. I mean, ultimately, that's going to be the barometer that drives things. But we want people to feel things as well. And I think Chris and our writers have found a really great balance between the two. And they set up the pitch perfectly for us. I mean, I'm not even going to lie. Our cast is dope. I love our cast. You know, everybody's on point and everybody's professional and shows up knowing their shit and shows up wanting to make the best show that we can make. We've all been in love with this since the beginning. Chris was really smart as a showrunner from the very start. As people got cast, he added us all to this this email thread that was just kind of a brief introduction to everyone, and we all got to chime in and start connecting when you don't turn your ringer off on your phone. See, that, normally I'd be doing this on my phone. I'd have my phone in my hand. But it was a great way for us to start bonding right away and start telling jokes right away. There's a lot of joke telling on this set. I would love for the audience to see an outtake reel of the, I would love to see an outtake reel of this show. We have, we have some really crazy shit that we've done on this show. Some stuff, you know, that we did in the first three didn't make it into the first three, but man, I bet the audience would get a kick out of seeing some of the outtakes.
That'll be great. I'd love to see that. Maybe we can get a special edition DVD or Blu-ray or whatever.
Maybe.
Or even a show. That'd be awesome. I mean, it's great to hear so much, you know, that you have so much fun when filming it. And I think that makes it more special is when you as a cast actually really enjoy and you've got your hearts into it and you get on so well with each other.
I think it shows. Really,
it does. It shines through.
You know, chemistry is, it's that kind of, that X factor that you can't necessarily describe, but you know it when you see it or feel it. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what I feel like this has always felt special from the very first moment I picked up the script. I knew it was special. And I had an opportunity when I came on board with this show. I had two competing offers at the same time, another show. And I had to make a choice, which is rare, and I'm not complaining about it. It was exciting. Not very often you have those types of opportunities, but that was the opportunity that was presented, and I chose Resident Alien and Sheriff Mike because you felt the synergy coming off the page. It was also one of the best pilots I had ever read. There's a lot of stuff in the pilot that didn't, you know, that's gotten utilized in different ways, but the pilot as written, it blew my mind. I got to the end and I was where you want everyone to be at the end of reading your pilot, which is dying to know more. And right. So once I got to the end, I was just like, oh, I have to do that. I told Chris before we got picked up, I told him, I said, hey, look, dude, if we don't get picked up, you're going to have to write the whole season anyway, because I need to know what the fuck happens. You know what I mean? After the pilot. So. But yeah, I knew it was special right away.
That's brilliant. It's fantastic to hear as well. And I love the fact that we're going to hear more about this, you know, get more of the backstories as well, as we obviously in character progression as we go, because it would be really nice to see, you know, excuse me, where Sheriff Thompson came from and things that turned him, because he's just, I just have this apartment in my image and you are respecting my authority, you know, that kind of thing.
he's a pretty dominant personality. I think, you know, as with most people like Sheriff Mike, I think there is a tremendous amount of insecurity that lies underneath him. And I think that those insecurities manifest themselves via his attitude.
Yeah, he definitely wants to try and show people he's in control.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think you know, part of him getting elected sheriff, you know, probably was this idea of I can keep you safe. I will make sure that you know the wolves that are, you know, surrounding the town, you know, that are dying to come in here and you know, just create chaos. I will make sure that doesn't happen. And, you know, I think he's as a matter of fact, I don't have to think. I know he's very insecure.
Yeah.
And so as the season progresses, we come to understand a little bit more about that.
That's great as well. And as he's straight talking, it's like, you know, he tells the town, he's trying to calm the town down. Like you just said, he wants to bring that calm in and control and let everyone know they're safe. And he goes, we haven't got a murderer. We've got a goddamn serial killer.
Serial killer, right. But that's a good thing because a serial killer, they don't run. They stay to kill more people. So this is a good thing, you know? Yeah, you know, his logic sometimes is a little wobbly. He's a good cop. He's just, he's very hungry to prove himself. To others, to the town, to I think I can talk about his father. Yeah, we're gonna meet some family on his behalf and prove himself to his dad as well. I think those are the things that that help fuel who he is and why he is the way he is. So I think the audience is going to get a kick out of it. Like I said, I would watch this show if I wasn't on it. You know, it's my type of show. It's funny. I mean, I think, you know, Chris writing for Family Guy for so many years and me being like a ridiculously huge Family Guy fan, our humor connected immediately. You know, it's great to be able to come in to shoot a scene and know that once you've gotten one take, you know, a couple sizes in what's on the page that it's a, all right, now, how do you think your character would do this? Or what do you think your character would say? Or let's, you know, and what's great about it is it starts this snowball effect of synergy, this energy between the actors. And I think that has a lot to do with us just being like, we like each other. You know, it starts this back and forth, this ping pong of improv that we all excel at, and we can get some truly spontaneous stuff, you know, just off the cuff, you know. I think in this last episode here with the little dog Cletus, when he goes down, played by Gus, when he goes down to the freezer, and he's, you know, barking, you know, and then the sheriff comes down and the deputy's there and we discover he's got meat in there. He's got bison. Yeah. And I think I'm not 100% sure, but I'm pretty sure that you got meat that I said to Harry was an improv, just throwing that out there. And then he responded with, I like meat, you know, and then Liz jumped right in with, oh, yeah, well, I like meat. I've had rabbit. I've had moose. And all of that was, you know, improv. Wow. You know what I mean? Like, and to see the stuff that we create get balanced into the show alongside the stuff that's written, it also feels good as an actor to feel like, okay, obviously there's a story we're telling and there's stuff on the page that needs to be conveyed in that story, but there is an openness and a willingness here in this environment for me to be able to play in the sandbox a little bit and knowing that you have other people that you can trust to play in there with you. So I hope this job, I hope the endeavor ends. I hope it runs forever. I love this. It's been a long time coming for something like this. Most of the jobs I've had have been, I'm usually pretty straight laced and, you know, playing other, you know, more serious cops or district attorneys or stuff like that and FBI. Yeah. And there's not a lot of room for improv there on the procedural shows, which makes sense because those shows are designed to help the viewer move along to solve a crime. You know what I mean? So you have to lay breadcrumbs. You know what I mean? You have to. That's part of the storytelling. So I would always feel like the majority of my my best stuff would end up on the editing floor because it didn't fit the character. You know what I mean? For him to say some of the shit that Sheriff Mike says. You know what I mean? But that impulse was always there to want to add something. And, you know, sometimes they'll let you add it, but you knew it wasn't going to make the cut. Sometimes they just let you film it so you can feel good about it all the while knowing that that's never in a million years going to make the cut. But I don't feel that way about this, which is kind of exciting as well, because we don't know what cut they're going to use. We don't know what take they're going to use as far as like some of the improv stuff. So, you know, the way that things are being cut together, it's a surprise to us as well, you know, to see what gets used and what doesn't. So we'll see.
Excellent. That's fantastic. I mean, you rounded up all my questions in.
Beautiful. And we did it in 23 minutes. So that's pretty good.
To hear about the show, you're right. I think that involvement where you can actually, you know, do that improv and have that rewarded in a show for someone like, you know, an actor like yourself, like you've expressed, is just amazing. And then for them to actually use that in the final cut, it is
Beatbox scene was improv. I mean, that was that wasn't in the pilot. You know, Chris and I had our director at the time, David Dobkins, who directed the pilot, you know, I wanted to have something unique about the character. And I started like beatboxing for them. And I told them, like, what if he's a great beatboxer? And so they loved the idea of it. And then like finding a moment when to actually put it in the show, and we're sitting in the car and they threw a camera up and they're like, let's do the thing. You know, maybe she goes for the radio and you do your thing. And it's like, all right, boom, roll it. And we rolled it and shot it. And, you know, it worked. You know, that doesn't happen in television. That doesn't happen. You don't get usually to the stage of filming and having, you know, everything, your storyboarding and all of that stuff all done to all of a sudden add a new scene and, you know, and it felt good to feel like you contribute, you know what I mean? Like that, you know, there's a part of, you know, my humor on a professional level and personal level that's being intertwined as well as everyone else's, you know what I mean? Like that's Chris Sheridan, our showrunner, is a unique talent in many ways beyond his ability to write. His leadership is it's special. It's unlike any other leadership I've ever seen in my 30 some odd years in this industry. He's a good dude. As I've said in other interviews, I would follow Chris into a lake of fire if he told me it wasn't hot. I noticed I said follow him because he goes in there first and bursts into flames.
Oh, yeah, stop.
I'm gonna go in there, right? But no. Seriously, he's real. Like he's a special kid. He's a special person. He's a cool dude.
Fantastic. And with the improv kind of stuff, do you feel? I mean, I had loads of questions about your background as well, which I'm not going to go into now because I think we've got a merge of different questions in. So, do you think the improv side of things? Because you've got a vast stage background as well. So do you think your theater and stage background has helped the improv, being able to improv on a show a bit more, or does it,
you know,
not really?
It's you know, I think in some ways it does. I mean, you know, there isn't a lot of room for improv on Broadway unless you are doing an improv show. You are doing something that's very scripted, even to where you have numbers on the stage, to where you stand to hit your light, to be in the right place and all that stuff. So that's But I think the way that it does help with improv is the mentality of the show must go on. So if something does go astray, you have to learn to vamp. You have to learn to keep the audience and get things back on track. You have to be able to think on your feet. And I think that component is one that comes from theater. I think theater is boot camp for the actor. Film and television are far easier than doing theater, in my opinion. Some days, I mean, the filming schedule is, it can be more taxing. It's grueling because you can have a 15, 16 hour day. You know what I mean? And, and when you're talking doing theater, musicals in particular, you know, you're doing 3 hours, 3.5 hours a night. But the skill that is honed of getting it right the first time, every time, is one that comes from live theater, not from film and television. Film and television, you can yell cut, you can reset, you can yell line, and someone will yell to you what it is you're supposed to be saying. You don't have those options on Broadway or in theater. So it creates a different type of discipline that I think transfers well to film and television. I think if you are a solid theater actor, you will likely be a very, very good film and television actor, which I don't know if it always works the other way, because theater is different. Although I will say this, when I first came out to LA after being on Broadway, everything was big and I was going into scenes and being big and over the top and you know, and I had a director say to me once, he was like, hey, when you're doing, I'll never forget this. I think his name was, Diamond. It was a film I did. It was like one of my second film. It was an indie film right after I did this movie called The Terminal with Tom Hanks and Steven Spielberg directed. I did an indie film called Partners, actually, I think it's what it was. And the director there explained to me how the transition from stage to screen with actors created challenges sometimes, because when you're a stage actor, you are trained to play to the balcony. You are trained to play to people way in the back so they can see and hear you. You project. But when it comes to film and television, as this director reminded, I think his name is Dave Diamond. Sounds weird now that I say it, but I think that's, I'd have to IMDb him, but I'm pretty sure that's it. He told me, he said, with film and television, the camera comes to you. We can be as tight as we want to be to get a reaction. A reaction can be much more subtle. So think of everything more of in a more organic way. And that stuck with me. And it kind of was a light switch moment for me at that moment. I figured out the difference between being on stage and being on camera, and I could credit him for that.
Excellent. I did act. It's a path I always wanted to take, and I'm so gutted I didn't at the time. It was acting, because I did theatre right through university, in amateur theatre, doing Pantomime Dame, which was probably one of the funniest things I've ever done in my life. Free reign. I'm the same age as you, very similar age, so we just sat there, and it was one of those times, you know, Panto Dames, you can say whatever you like, and it was all at university, so we knew everyone in the audience anyway. And so I'd singled out friends who I knew, and so I'd just, you know, just crack on with the jokes were there. It's an amazing time. And when you said about the things going wrong, the one time I can only think of something. I played one of the lords for Macbeth, and we had proper pipes. I'd never smoked a pipe in my life. And we stood right in the middle of about 300 school children, because they all come from the high school to watch Macbeth as part of their exams. And we stood there, very, very serious, you know, Macbeth. And we're talking about, you know, the demise and the craziness of Macbeth. I bit down on the pipe, and a wad of tobacco just went in slow motion, flew out the pipe and landed on the floor. And obviously, for me, I'm just, I can't, and not, no matter what it is, it'll take nothing to make you laugh. So I had to deliver the rest of the soliloquy and the rest of the speech with all these school kids crying with laughter, because they'd all be watching this piece and me with tears streaming down my face. But you're right, the show had to go on, and I was just like, I just walked off there with my head in my hands, like, oh my God.
It happens to all of us. It happens to everybody. I mean, if you've ever been, you know, in a live show, that's had or enough of them. Everyone's had a moment where something has gone wrong. I can think of many of them, and I can think of one of them I can't talk about it because it hasn't happened yet with the show. You almost got it. Almost got a spoiler. No, but those things happen, you know, and you just got to keep going I think that's where you start honing that professionalism. That's where it starts to come into play, you know. And it's all about experience. And once you learn how to if you can juggle live theater, like I said, you can. The transition to film and television, I think, is, I don't want to say easy, but I don't worry about getting up every morning and seeing how my voice is feeling and if I'm going to be able to hit a high B flat later on tonight. You know what I mean? Like, that's not something I worry about anymore. I worried then about it a lot. You know, you wake up every morning, trying to see what the voce is going to be like that day.
Oh, yeah. And back there, I was going to say that's your career. I was going to say something else, but that same play, actually, I was the night watchman. And I was sat with a proper nightgown on, never worn anything like that in my life, sat on the stage, legs, as a Goliath does, sits there with my legs apart, talking again as the night watchman, wondering, thinking I was really delivering a funny speech, and it wasn't. It's because all these school kids could see right up the night sky. I did have my boxer shorts on underneath, but obviously that was causing me, you know. No, I love
a little out of character, but you know, it makes sense in that instance for sure.
I just love theater. I did a film as well a couple of years ago, and actually that's where I was thinking of, because you're right with the difference, because I was only a featured extra, so I had some lines, which is fantastic. I was really happy. But it was a 12-hour day. I was there filming for 20 minutes. That was it. My part was 20 minutes, but I had to be there till the end. And you're right.
And then on screen, it was like 2 seconds.
I'm an office manager. And I think for 3 hours, because one of my scenes, I can ruin the film anyway. One of the scenes is a character I get comeuppance, but I'm handcuffed and tied on a concrete floor, and I have acid poured over my private bits. The story's
a lot of stuff with your private bits.
There are
first school kids, and now
it's kind of worrying, isn't it? But yeah, I was stuck for 3 hours. I was on a concrete floor in a warehouse, just lying there while they were getting all this. And I was just lying, fascinated, because you've got the cinematography, you've got this, you know, the cameramen, you've got the sound guys all trying to make everything look right, the lighting, and everything was walking. I kept telling me off because I was like, wow, looking around, like, stop it. I was like, sorry.
It's a lot of work, man. I think that's probably the thing that gets, doesn't get nearly enough attention is, you know, as the actors, as the people in front of the camera, you tend to get a lot of the focus of a show or production. But there are so many people that it takes to make all of it work, from the people who are, I mean, as the actor, you, that's why, you know, for me personally, that's why you always have to show up when you're the actor. You always have to show up and be prepared, because for you, you need to, because when it comes to getting, whether it's a film or a show to the air, there is so much work that goes into before the actor shows up and long after the actor is gone, that during that short window when you're there in your trailer, you know, to shoot your scenes. So I always feel like you should come in prepared and you should come in ready to work, because, you know, you're going to be the first person, you're going to be the last person to get there and the first person to be able to leave when you're done. So during that time that you are there, you should know your shit, because long after you're gone, there's still editing that has to take place. There's still, you know, other things that have to go on. Your work is done, but other people are still working. So it's kind of like all the more reason to show up and, you know, always, because look, it doesn't matter how great of an actor you are. If the shot is soft, if the cameraman doesn't get it, you know, get it framed right, or if it's not in full focus, you know what I mean? Or it doesn't matter how great the shot is if you don't get the sound. And it doesn't matter how wonderful an actor may be in a moment if that moment is empty and you need it to be a moment full of extras, you know, to create an environment. So it's all a part of the process. And, you know, we should pay a little homage a little more often to the vastness of what it actually takes to make something like our show or every other show for that matter, actually to get from the, you know, the script to the screen. It's a journey, yo. It's tough. It is hard. It's not hard work in the sense of like, you know, we're not lifting pallets of concrete and shit like that. You know what I mean? But if you had a scene where someone was going to lift a pallet of concrete, you would then have a set designer and prop designer who would have to come up with a way to make that pallet of concrete look like a real pallet of concrete, and maybe have a wiring team of stunts to come in with the actor or maybe a stunt person and all those things. You know what I mean? So it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work.
Oh yeah, definitely. People who keep saying it's an actor's life, an easy life. It's not. It's not an easy life at all.
It ain't the hardest. That's, you know, but we work. Yeah. It's true.
Exactly. And like you said, there's a whole production, a whole crew, everyone behind it, right through makeup and everyone. It's amazing. Such a huge production, and to get any sort of show going at the moment, which is really. You know, so kudos to all of them. I mean, stunt people as well. The stunt guys who go out and do everything as well. It's just
phenomenal. All of that. Especially when you look at like big budget, like action movies. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? The stunt work is insane. One of my favorite, like, you know, I mean, I'm in everything. I'm into Marvel and DC and all that, but I'm also like, you know, with Dark Horse, with Hellboy. Hellboy 2 to me was like one of the best like choreographed like fight stunt like films I had ever seen. You know, that elf, that dark elf who had the sword and shit, man. And oh man, it was incredible. It was incredible. That type of work, you know, people like to often kind of dismiss Hollywood and we're all living some fluffy life out here. Man, I wash my own dishes. I take out my own trash. I vacuum my own floors. Me and my wife, we take care of our house and our son. You know, we're not like super special or living some, you know, taking a gold helicopter to Super Target or some shit. I don't know. You know, we're people, you know, and we're trying to, you know, live and keep your head above water, just like everybody else.
Exactly. I'm fully appreciating that. I'm fully with you on that one. Everyone I speak to, it's the same, you know, it's the same thing. You know, there's can be times, sometimes we see when shows like this, you know, great shows like this where you've got great, you know, there's times when you've got that worry, you've got that stress because you're trying to find the next role and trying to find that next job. And, you know, you're hoping
that the audience likes it. You're hoping that this isn't just funny and entertaining to us.
Yeah, you know, and that's someone's going to like it to get it signed up for another season. And
yeah, you know, and I'll never, and you know, as we wrap this up, you know, I it reminds me of a moment from the pilot of The Closer, which was the first pilot that I had ever done. It was the first pilot I had ever booked. And I remember being like, you know, I was green, like this was like way, way back in the day. And I was definitely the most inexperienced of all the other actors on the show, you know, with Kira and John Tenney and GW and Tony Dennison. You know, all of them had done lots of other stuff, right? And I remember like being on the pilot, you know, being like, hey guys, yeah, we're gonna be on television. Woo! And being so excited. I'll never forget like GW coming over to me, and he's like, we're shooting a pilot. And I was like, yeah, but I mean, you know, it's a great pilot. Of course, we're going to end up on television. It's a great pilot. And he goes, Corey, do you have any idea how many great pilots don't get picked up? And it was just like somebody sticking a pin in a balloon like over my head. But needless to say, I was right. I was right. We did get picked up and had a good run. And I had that same feeling about, I've only had that feeling like three times. Hairspray, The Closer, and this. So I knew from the very, very beginning that Resident Alien was going to be something special. How special it'll be, I don't know. I don't know if that's up to, I think that's kind of, I don't know, up to the fans. I don't know. I think it's just kind of up to us. I mean, I think as long as we keep doing what we're doing and people keep liking it, then mission accomplished.
Fantastic. And as fans, as someone watching it, it'll go. It's going to carry on.
Good. I'm glad you enjoy it. It's nice to see it over there. You know, that's playing, you know, around the, you know, the world, you know, which is, you know, which is kind of cool. You know, most shows go into syndication and then they're sold, you know, to other markets and stuff. But this kind of went everywhere at once, which is kind of cool. Like seeing, you know, people tweeting from, you know, different parts of the world. It's pretty exciting. I'm not going to lie.
I can imagine. It's cool. But I'm going to bring you on to my signature question as I do wrap this one up for you now. Yeah. So I don't want to keep you up for the rest of your afternoon. this is a strange one. And I had it because I had a guy who came on my show a couple of years ago who was in Star Wars. And he's also worked with Jim Henson for about 30 odd years as a puppeteer or a muppeteer. And someone sent this question, and it was a personality question, which I think I love asking people. If you could have a Muppet created after your own character, after your own personality, what Muppet would it be? What kind of Muppet?
Oh, man. You know, what's funny is I actually, maybe I'll see if I can find the photo and send it to you. I got Muppetized when I was on The Closer. They made a Gabriel Muppet that was on Sesame Street because they had this bit where they had a closer on there, but it was a person, it was a Muppet that was closing doors and closing things and stuff. And so they had a little Gabriel puppet. I think, honestly, I'm probably closest to Fozzie, man. Waka waka waka. I think that's probably I'm kind of a mix, I think, of probably Fozzie and Animal. I think those would be my two. A mix of that. So either Ozzy or Fanimal. Take your pick. But I think I think that would be my mashup.
Excellent. I was gonna say, well, there you go for Animal.
Hey, there you go, man. Bingo.
They were my dad's drum kit. They're about 60 years old, that drum kit. It's still, you know,
wow.
He's played Ronnie Scott's, he used to play a few jazz, Dave Brubeck he's played for. And my dad used to, obviously, not my son, he's only 14, but my son's doing it now, so yeah, he's got them.
That's cool, anyway, man.
No, it's great. So I just thought, perfect Animal, Ed. Brilliant. Okay, as I wrap this up, is there anything, Corey, because I mean, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you, by the way. I've just been sat here enthralled.
Man. It's been nice. I'm glad you reached out.
No, I'm glad. Is there anything you would like to say to people who are listening or watching at the moment in time?
Wear a mask. Thank you for watching the show. We worked really hard on it, and we hope to bring you a lot more laughter and happiness and joy as the season progresses, and hopefully we create a little escapism for everybody for a little while, at least 1 hour a week.